now, back to Whitley on Wine.
Slowly.
With your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist, Robert Whitley.
We're back.
He's afraid to talk.
We're back, and joining me from Monterey County is Reggie Hammond, the winemaker at Ventana Vineyards. And I have a funny, I don't know if it's funny, but I have a story to tell anyway. When we were doing the what we call the sweepstakes round of voting at the Monterey Wine Competition last weekend, and we were doing the white wines, we finally eliminated everybody and we were down to one winner. And when the judges are tasting these wines, there are 26 judges in the room, and they don't know the wines they're tasting. They just know the grape variety and the vintage maybe, and I'm not even sure I tell them that. But when we got to the winning white wine, I just looked at Reggie because Reggie was one of our judges. I said, Reggie, get up and take a bow. And I think at that point, Reggie, did you realize that it was your Riesling that won?
Well, I had certainly been hoping that it was mine, as we had tasted it the day before. So it wasn't a complete surprise, but it really felt great when you told me that.
You know, you've been doing very well at the wine competitions. Your Syrah, I think, took a big medal up at the San Francisco Chronicle.
Yeah, it was a double gold up there. It's been doing quite nicely.
Yeah, and then you had a very close vote for the best of show white wine, and it came down to we had Eva Bertrand on in the first half hour, and her company Freshenet imports that Vianta Albarino.
Okay,
and it was a close vote. They were both really good wines, and I've sort of fallen in love with your Riesling. Just recently, I was up taking care of, some of the prep work for the Monterey Wine Competition, and Randy Pura gave me a bottle and said it did well at the San Francisco competition, and I thought it won a double gold, but I'm questioning that now.
I'm pretty sure it was a gold medal, but it did receive the best of class.
Okay. So it also did very well. And, I brought it home and tasted it and thought, man, this is a pretty nice Riesling, which – it doesn't really surprise me because I've always been impressed with the Ventana wines. They do very well. I don't taste every vintage every year, but I've had enough over the years to know that I have a pretty high opinion. But also Monterey County seems to be an area that, and this is from Arroyo Seco, which is a specific area within Monterey County, seems to do very well with Riesling. And I'm curious, why do you think that is? And are you sensing that maybe Riesling is riding a little bit of a wave right now?
Oh, I think that Riesling is just getting ready to ride a huge wave of both popularity with consumers and also among wine producers. We're getting a lot of phone calls where we're actually unable to sell fruit to other wineries because we have consistent buyers, and our program is growing so fast.
Right.
And one of the things that makes Monterey so perfect for these varietals, and I'm going to just kind of lump Gewürztraminer right in with Riesling, is it's just a really cool, long-growing season. Our hottest part of the day is really between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wind comes up, and it blows straight off the Monterey Bay, and it cools it down.
Oh, and Monterey Bay is deep.
Yes.
And the wind starts blowing, and it gets cold. I mean, I was there in King City for a week before the competition, and the weather had really turned nice, and we were having these beautiful, gorgeous days that would be about 70 degrees, maybe by 1 or 2 in the afternoon. But by 5 o'clock, it was starting to blow, and it was starting to get cold, and I needed my leather jacket.
Right, right.
And that's
during the summer, it starts earlier as the Central Valley heats mm-hmm. up a little earlier in the day.
And that's really good for grapes, isn't it?
I think it's great for two reasons. One, it's great for grapes, and if it didn't do that, it would probably look like San Jose down here and be nothing mm-hmm. but pavement.
Now, I think in one of the articles I wrote, and I've written several about the wine competition, one for my Copley column and one for Wine Review Online and, some other postings that I've done. And I've described your Riesling as off-dry, but I don't think it's very off-dry. How do you view that wine?
Well, It's so hard to judge a wine as being off dry just by the residual sugar number alone.
Right.
This particular Riesling, the 06, has an RS of 1.8%.
Mm-hmm.
But with a higher acidity nearing.
I was going to say it doesn't seem. You know, it just doesn't seem like it has that much residual sugar in it. I think you could put it in with dry Rieslings, and it wouldn't be that out of place.
No, and that's really the hope is wherever the residual ends up, we just need to balance it out with the right amount of acid.
Well, you know, I was having this conversation with Michael Epstein recently, and we were talking about labeling Rieslings so that people would have some idea what style they were going to get. Is it dry? Is it off dry? Is it a little sweeter or whatever? And we both came to the same conclusion that just putting the residual sugar on the bottle won't do it for you because it's so misleading because it's all about the balance in the wine.
You're absolutely correct on that. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the startup group, the International Riesling Foundation.
No, I'm not.
And this is... A couple of the founders are Jim Treeseis from New York and Dan Berger here in California.
Uh-huh.
And the idea is to get some standards that producers will, of course, voluntarily, but will adhere to. And a sugar number is not the answer because it's for exactly the same reason that
sure.
you described.
Yeah.
We need to get the terminology straight and get everybody using yeah. the same thing.
And I want everyone to know that that when I'm talking about, you know, an off-dry Riesling, you know, not being out of place if you're tasting it with a dry Riesling, I don't mean that pejoratively. I don't mean that a little sweeter off-dry Riesling is a bad thing. You would just pair it with different foods.
Right. And I did listen to your show from a couple of weeks ago. And if you want a dry Riesling to go with a certain food, it'd be nice to know in advance.
Exactly what it's going to give you. And so you know, there's no substitute for experience. Actually, going out and tasting a wine and thinking, what would I put this with?
Right.
What do you think accounts for the increasing popularity of Riesling?
One, it's just such a nice wine to drink on its own. It has a lot of fruitier flavors, and it just goes with so many foods, especially in the off-dry style that we make with Asian cuisine, something with a little bit of spice because that sugar will really can really offset some of the heat you get in some of the Asian foods.
You know, I don't mind it as an aperitif. I mean, I typically would have a dry Riesling as an aperitif. But you know, when I brought the bottle home from King City a month or so ago, when Randy so kindly gave me a bottle to try, I had it as an aperitif, and I thought it was lovely, and I really enjoyed it because it was well balanced. You know, it didn't absolutely have to have food for me to sit there and enjoy it.
Right. Good. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I do want to get into a little bit of your background, but before we go into the break, tell me a little bit about the Syrah, this gold medal-winning Syrah.
Well, Syrah, we first planted Syrah in 78, more than a decade before anyone else had a commercial planting here in Monterey. So we have some older vines, and of course, you know, we can talk for hours on end about the...
Randy, I knew as soon as I asked you a question, the music was going to come up. Anyway, hold that thought, and we will continue with Reggie Hammond following these messages.
Give me a peach, save the fuzz for my... Peel me a grape.
And now, back to Whitley on Wine.
Slowly.
With your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist, Robert Whitley.
I'm back with winemaker Reggie Hammond of Ventana Vineyards. And before we went into the break, Reggie, I threw you a question about the Syrah, and I had a reason for doing that. You know, Monterey has received much acclaim recently for some of its vineyard-designated Pinot Noirs, you know, Gary's Vineyard and Franchione and, you know, you... Rosellas and things
sure.
like that. And and I think even before that, it was really beginning to build a reputation for Chardonnay. I think some of the best Chardonnay in California comes out of Monterey County. And we've already covered the ground about Riesling. You know, Riesling's been a good grape variety for Monterey and shown very well over the years. But Syrah, I think, is a little bit of a mystery. Monterey Syrah is a little bit of a mystery to some people. Yet, you know, there's like one of your neighboring vineyards, the San Bernabe Vineyard.
Sure.
I think has just been making wonderful Syrah for a number of years. And now you've got this this kind of star vintage of Syrah. What do you think the potential for Syrah is? Can it compete in, you know, with Pinot Noir for popularity, red wines from Monterey County?
Well, I think it certainly can from a quality standpoint. There were quite a few years in there where we really had to put on our thinking caps on how are we going to farm this in the cool climate that we have. And the great thing about Syrah is it performs well in warm and cool climate.
Mm-hmm.
It just gives you a little bit different wine. But there were a few years in there where you know, we had to figure out trellising. We had to do leaf stripping just to get all the flavors out so that we're not
–
we have this great cracked white pepper in our Syrah, and we want that to be a good thing, not necessarily the only thing.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said that because I like that spicy character in cool climate Syrahs. You know, as long as you get the tannins ripe enough so that they aren't harsh,
right,
and you develop some of the other fruit characteristics, I think that pepper character is quite extraordinary. And then you do a blend that has, I believe, some Grenache that also has that peppery character.
Right. The Ruby Stone is about 60% Grenache and about 40% Syrah.
Yeah.
And the Grenache also has that peppery aspect to it, and also a certain amount of minerality from the cool climate.
Mm-hmm.
And the,
yeah, I thought that was a lovely wine, but I guess where I'm going with that is I think that it's fair to say that you have a lot of diversity there in Monterey County, and I think the potential for Syrah is pretty exciting.
I do too. I think we're going to see great things in the future from the Syrah.
Now, you know, we've got about 10 minutes left in the show, and I want to kind of just go into your background a little bit. You know, somebody told me you're a rocket scientist.
No. I did spend 5 minutes as an engineer for Boeing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm always curious how people made their way into the wine business. I get asked that question all the time, and people come up to me and say, well, you know, how did you get the job you have, and how do you do what you do? And, you know, and I just, it sort of evolved over years. And I found that to be the case with winemakers often. They didn't start out, you know, unless you were raised in, you know, a winemaking family. Most
right.
winemakers didn't start out to be winemakers. So what sucked you in here?
Well, drinking on most jobs really is frowned upon, so that was a big thing for me. But the former owner of Ventana, Doug Meter, is mm-hmm. a family friend of ours, and I called Doug and told him I've done two careers. I'm ready to move into wine. That's what I.
And what were you doing at the time?
At the time, I was a manufacturing engineer for Boeing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't think of anything more different than being an engineer and looking at diagrams and working on computers and then going out into the vineyards and tasting grapes and making wine.
No, they really don't have anything in common.
Mm-hmm.
But one's exciting and one isn't, and I'll leave it to everyone else to
figure out which one you're describing.
So I called Doug Meter and told him I was interested in the wine business. And he gave me some very good advice. He told me to take two lithium tablets and throw his phone number away.
Uh-huh.
So when I called him the next week, he invited me down, and he offered me a job. And just due to life circumstances, I was not able to accept the offer. So we continued to talk about it over the course of a few months, and he finally brought me on. With my main qualification being that I don't know anything about making wine or growing grapes.
So you started with a clean slate.
Exactly.
You hadn't learned any bad habits.
yes, that was his point.
Uh-huh. And what was your interest in wine at that stage?
It was just as much a fascination as anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a natural product and going through the transformation, and it's the type of product that brings people together, and it is always better if you share it.
Yeah.
And so I'd done a lot of consumer tastings, but At that point, if you think you know something, you really don't.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm curious because a lot of people can be taught the chemistry. And, you know, a lot of big wineries have labs and they have enologists who are not really winemakers. They're people who do the chemical analysis and whatnot.
Sure.
Be a winemaker. You know, I know you've got to go you got to walk through the winery. You taste your red wines out of barrel. You're trying to figure out, you know, how they're doing and how you want to handle them over a period of time. Coming into it cold, without a background, how difficult was it for you to adjust to that kind of you know, regimen?
Well, it's hard to think of it as difficult when it's just so much fun. but as you taste through barrels, the first year as you're just getting familiar with it, you know the old saying: there's no substitute for experience, mm-hmm. and that's really the case here. You just need to taste wine, and not just our own wine, but taste all the wines that you can, and see what other people are doing, and call other winemakers. Hey,
sure.
I like that. How in the hell did you do that?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure you know Gary Eberle down at Eberle Winery in
sure.
Paso Robles. He told a funny story several years ago at a seminar I went to. He said, you know, he started at Estrella River right out of Davis.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of winemakers got jobs right out of college as chief winemakers back then because there weren't enough winemakers and the wine industry was really growing and expanding. But they didn't have any experience. And there was nobody down the street who had any experience. So they would end up calling classmates. And a guy would say, well, you know, on page so-and-so of certain textbook, they described this problem. And then Gary said, you know, that's why they called us textbook winemakers. I always thought that was a cute story.
Right. It wasn't due to their perfection.
Yeah. But now you do have a body of experience, you know, a lot of people with background that you can call upon, other, as you said, other winemakers. You know, have you had this problem or what do you do when blah, 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 blah happens because, you know, things happen.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So it's been nice, and I've almost come full circle because every once in a while I get the phone call where somebody asks me for advice.
Mm-hmm.
Of course,
mm-hmm.
At that point I tell them they're really in trouble.
You know, I saw a note here in the research that Felicia, my assistant, put together for me that Ventana is a research vineyard, and you taste wine, you analyze techniques from all over the world. So what I'm gleaning from that is that you do a fair amount of travel and looking at what other people are doing.
I try to. I've been to you know, several places in France and Germany, and
mm-hmm.
My wife and I made a trip to Ukraine to visit the winery of the Tsars, Massandra, a few years ago.
Did you learn anything there about wine?
About wine?
Yeah.
I learned a lot more about people than I did about wine there.
The history and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, they didn't exactly let me talk to the winemaker there.
Mm-hmm.
So something about why should we tell you how we bake our bread, I think was the direct quote.
Yeah. Well, I do know that that Ventana has gone through a change. Doug Meter, whom you've talked about, is no longer the owner. And
right.
The winery's under new ownership, new management. What is the plan for the way forward?
I think the plan is to stay on the road that we're on, making better wines every year. I think we're going to grow the brand.
The owners are certainly
committed to doing that and to not just maintaining quality, but
sure.
providing all the capital we need to get better and produce world-class wines.
Reggie, how many cases does Ventana produce now?
We're doing about 30,000 cases a year.
Yeah, and that's not huge.
I mean, not at all.
To compare it, you know, a winery like Joseph Phelps up in Napa Valley, somewhere between 70 and 90,000 cases. And that's not considered huge either.
Right, right.
You know? So you've got some room to grow. But you have a lot of vineyard land, I understand.
We have about 400 acres, and mm-hmm. we're selling about two-thirds of our fruit now to other wineries.
Now, you've hit big home runs recently with the Riesling and the Syrah. What do you consider the stars? Your grape varieties that you think are going to be the signature for Ventana as you move forward. I know you've done very well with your Chardonnay in the past as well.
Yeah, the Chardonnay is what we're really banking on. We're of the 400 acres, we're about 200 acres of Chardonnay, and the Chardonnay at last fall's Affairs of the Vine was voted the number one Chardonnay in the world by Affairs of the Vine. That was a very nice feather in our cap.
Now, Chardonnay is changing. I mean, stylistically, the way winemakers approach Chardonnay. Have you made any big moves in that direction at Ventana? I've always thought of your Chardonnay as being pretty well balanced.
We really do a our Chardonnay in our own house style. We tank ferment half and we barrel ferment half.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really trying to grab the best of both worlds, the fruitiness and still grabbing some body from the barrel fermentation.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things about Monterey County Chardonnay that I've really fallen in love with, I like some like, you know, Bernardus and Morgan and whatnot. I believe those wines are very complex. I mean, they're Chardonnays that always seem to have multiple layers of fruit. They're not simple. These are wines that even not overdone, they seem to offer a lot of complexity, a lot of interest, a lot of personality.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty typical of a lot of Chardonnays in Monterey. And again, it's the cool climate where you retain the natural acidity and retain the tropical flavors that we see mm-hmm. here in the Arroyo Seco.
So now, what should I expect with the San Diego competition? If you're at Affairs of the Vine, you won the best Chardonnay. Okay, so San Francisco, you go and you do well, double gold with your Syrah, and a gold medal for your Riesling, and then you win best of show white wine with your Riesling in Monterey. I mean, that's three different competitions and three different wines that won. So, what are you going to surprise us with next?
I think our 07 Gewürztraminer is really going to be a knockout. We did just fantastic with the prior vintage, and as a matter of fact, it's been sold out. That's why it wasn't entered. We didn't have anything to enter in these earlier competitions.
You know, Gewürztraminer is a tough grape. I think a lot of the California Gewürztraminers over the years have been a little on the thin side, as opposed to, you know, an Alsatian Gewürztraminer, which has more body and just more depth to it.
Right, and there's a way to get good body. Besides having 16% alcohol, but that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But again, with the cool climate that we have down here, we're able to get the fruit ripe in a timely manner. It's Gewürz is early. It's one of the first varietals that we'll pick.
Yeah, and I'm not familiar with your Gewürz. I like Gewürzes, though. That late harvest Gewürztraminer from Navarro that won the best of show dessert
right. In
Monterey was an outstanding wine. But dry Gewürztraminers, slightly off dry Gewürztraminers, can be very nice wines. They have that floral component that is just so inviting.
Right, the floral and the lychee nut.
So I'll look for that at the San Diego competition.
Great.
Anyway, I know you're a busy man. I want to thank you for spending so much time with me this afternoon. Congratulations on your victories in San Francisco and Monterey, and good luck in the future.
Thanks, Robert. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Reggie Hammond. This is Robert Whitley for Whitley on Wine, saying until next week, ciao.